Okay, so the project part A is due today. So today we are going to start talking about essentially doing information retrieval for the web pages. Much of what we'll do today in the next class would actually form the basis for the project part two, which is essential link analysis. Okay.
You don't want an electronic submission.
No.
Okay.
Okay. So basically we have been doing this idea of traditional information retrieval, and this is a huge surprise for many of you, which is to say that search engine really is just a text retrieval system for web pages. Okay, I guess it's not a real surprise because you came up to this course not to figure out traditional information retrieval, but to figure out how search engines work. So from the point of view of traditional information retrieval, you could say, well, it's just search engines are just extensions of traditional information retrieval, but they have to take into account web pages and then a web interface perhaps. So the real question is, what's new? You know, what's the big deal about doing IR on web pages? Okay. And so what we'll do today is talk about some of the things. Again, this is a thought that's been in the back of your mind for most of the semester. But then we'll just bring it out and then talk about what are the specific extensions, if any, we need to do to handle web pages. Okay. So here are some characteristics of the web that are actually relevant in terms of how information retrieval methods have to change. I mean, you know, that they need to be sensitive to. Okay. So I put these here because these are the ones that essentially make web information retrieval somewhat different from traditional information retrieval. So for each of those bullets, you have to ask yourself, is that really not true for traditional information retrieval? Okay. So the first one is, web pages are, you know, large numbers, many more pages than there are books or articles so traditional information retrieval was started in the context of libraries, that means published books. There are much, much fewer published books than there are web pages, okay? And there are much, much fewer Supreme Court decisions or law decisions than there are web pages, okay? So if you're talking about much larger volume, and they're widely distributed on multiple servers, and they're extremely dynamic and volatile in the sense a page which was there yesterday may not be there today, and, you know, all sorts of things keep coming in and going out. You understand that. The other thing is, web pages have, so this is kind of, you can think of this as a challenge. This makes IR harder, okay, because it's a much larger scale, okay. What is easier, this is an aspect that makes IR easier, which is they have much more structure. For example, they are extensively tagged. So a page basically has header information, title information, blinking text information, color information, all this extra stuff. Whereas a book actually has it, but only your eyes can capture it easily. Whereas this is computer readable. You know, a computer can actually easily see that this part of the page is in bigger font. Because why? You know that you write this in HTML, and so there will be an H1/H1. So that means it's in a bigger font. A title/title, that means it's the title text. So it's tagged, which gives the structure of the page. And they're much more, and they're more extensively linked. So it's not so much that traditional IR books don't have structure, it's that the book structure is obvious to you, not to the computer. Okay? And similarly, books are also linked. Books and Supreme Court decisions are linked to each other. Okay, I use books and Supreme Court decisions as the traditional IR application, because that's what IR started with. You know, our lawyers would be interested in figuring out what are the precedents, what are the most closely related Supreme Court decisions or the circuit court decisions that are relevant to my case. Okay, so I would say that, there is linking between books and linking between Supreme Court decisions, except that linking is implicit. They'll just basically put a number, and then you are supposed to go and find out what that number is. Whereas on the web, pages have hyperlinks, and so the hyperlink will directly take you to the other page. That's the whole point, right? So the link structure is more directly explicit, so you can actually use it, that, you know, without even having to extract it. Whereas if you are trying to do it on the IR, you first had to extract the link structure. Because you might feel lazy to extract it, you may not be using it. Okay? Since this was staring at you, you would think, can I do something with it? Okay? And then, of course, there is all sorts of, you know, metadata about not just what is shown on the page, but additional tag information saying this page is about. For example, people actually can write for their pages a meta tag saying, you know, what's the sentence that you want a search engine to actually show as the snippet for your page. Okay? So those things are actually easily directly available. So these are opportunities. This is sort of a challenge. You have to deal with this. These are opportunities. You want to exploit it. Okay? And then this is again a challenge. So it's like challenge, opportunity. And this challenge is web search is very noisy. Pages with high similarity to query may still differ in relevance in terms of whether or not people will actually care about them. And in fact, the reason for the noisiness is very much related to the fact that web pages are uncurated. Okay? So when you print a book, essentially, although there is such a thing called vanity press, that means you write the book and you pay the publisher to publish it. Okay? Not too many people would actually have the money to do the vanity press. So the books that are present in the library are in some sense curated because somebody thought if they publish this book, they will make some money. And some other publisher other than the writer was actually, you know, was putting their money to publish this book. Okay? So somebody other than the writer actually read the book before it got published. Okay? So that's curation. To some extent, you know, if for example you're trying to write a book which is wildly inaccurate, maybe a publisher would be worried about publishing it. Okay? And whereas in a page, in a web page, anybody can put up any web page and nothing can be done to you. Right? And so it's uncurated. And also furthermore, it's adversarial in the sense, if you know that people are looking for a certain set of queries and you want them to come to your page, you will suddenly add extra tags to your page so that, oh, I am also selling that stuff. And then once they come, then you'll say, okay, you know, why don't you buy what I'm actually trying to sell you? Right? So you could do this. And we talked about this point, that adversarial nature of the web is one of the main points that we have to be aware of. Remember, water started flowing upwards. And why did the water start flowing upwards? Because more people put more pages, essentially saying water flows upward. That's it. Okay? So you have to deal with this adversarial nature of the web in trying to deal with ranking. Okay? And in particular, when we come here, what we'll see is the similarity matrix that we developed to decide which page is most similar to the query that you're sending, okay, those are fine. Except a page which has the words that I'm looking for may still not actually be the one that I should be looking at. So for example, I could put the word White House on my page. And if you're looking for White House, my page V is basically just as relevant in terms of similarity as the official whitehouse.gov page. How do you tell the difference? Okay. Now, this problem is much, much less immediate in traditional information retrieval. It's there, but it's much, much less immediate because there is a curation going on. Okay. Not everybody would be allowed to write a book which basically with a title itself is misleading, for example. Whereas I can do that, you know, on a web page. Okay, so it becomes a much more immediate task to deal with. So this was a challenge, this was an opportunity, opportunities should be exploited, challenges should be handled, this is another challenge, we have to handle this challenge, and then this is an opportunity, which is that actually web users really are, at least, they really aren't particularly aware of So basically, they are easy to please because they're looking for small queries, and they're happy enough if they get something relevant. Okay? So it's not like you're being paid for your services. Okay. So this makes web search somewhat easier. This is hard, this is easy, this is you can exploit this opportunity, and then you need to deal with this challenge. Okay. So these, it's just put in one place, in my view, what are the big differences between searching among the web pages and searching among curated books and articles, or Supreme Court decision, which is what traditional IR did. Okay. Now, if you want to deal with this, so for the first one, we will talk about, first of all, one of the important issues is that you need to, since people just put up pages and they don't register it with anybody, you know, if you publish a book, you have to register the book with somebody, right? All the good books are registered, there is an ISBN number, there is a Library of Congress catalog number. Okay, and so whenever you do this book, you have to actually register it. And so there is a central registry of all the books that were ever published. There isn't any central registry of all the web pages that were ever put up, because they're being put up every few seconds. Okay, what that means is, to even get the list of all the pages, you need to go actively crawl the various websites and bring the web pages back into your database. Okay, so we will talk about how to crawl and dynamically maintain the index. You know, traditional IR starts with the assumption that the entire set of documents over which you are supposed to search is given to you. In web search, that's not true, because the documents are out there somewhere and you are supposed to find and crawl them. Okay, you can in some sense make your life very simple by crawling only 7 documents. Okay, and then you just have to search over 7 documents. It will be very efficient search, right? And so in some sense, actually, the more you crawl, the more work you have to do during ranking and indexing, right? And the only reason, you know, search engines have to crawl much bigger databases, much bigger corpuses, is because otherwise there is competition and somebody else will go to some other search engine which seems to have more results. Okay, so we will talk about crawling and maintaining indexes. This is the sort of an infrastructure that is needed. We will get to that a little later. Okay, for the web pages having more structure, you can actually exploit that structure. You can use the links and tags and metadata to improve similarity computation and relevance computation. Okay, we'll talk about how to do that, and probably you have some ideas already. The fact that web search is noisy and adversarial, use some notion of importances that can actually be computed using what is available. For example, the link structure of the web, for example, the accesses to the page, and so on, to figure out, to differentiate wheat from the chaff. Okay, between two pages which both are similar, the 1.0 similar with respect to the query, okay, you still want to differentiate. Okay, and so you could basically, we will look at a variety of ideas. In fact, the idea of link analysis is basically looking at all the pages as implicitly defining a social network, and then finding the important people, important pages in this social network. Okay, so that's something that we could do. So these are the solutions. Okay, and then as far as this is concerned, well, they're easily impressed. So it's not it's somewhat easier to handle people, but in fact, of these, I would basically look at this later, and these are the two which we'll be talking starting today. Okay, so how do you exploit the tag structure and the link structure, and how do you deal with the adversarial, uncurated nature of the web using these? That's what we'll be looking at. Okay, and then we'll come back to that. Okay, so using of tag information, I already said that you have HTML tags, you know, pages have HTML tags, and although HTML is really about display, we'll talk about this much more when we get to XML, the tags in HTML have no semantics. They really are instructions to the rendering engine. Okay, H1 means make it bigger, H2 means make somewhat smaller. Okay, however, since we basically know who looks at these pages, people look at these pages, and people tend to think big letters means more important, small letters means less important. Okay, small print means really less important, footnote means even less important. This is what people think. Okay, so the semantics for what are truly really rendering based tags such as H1, H2 and so on will wind up being there because you know who the people, who the audience is for these pages. So you can actually assume that H1 is more important than H2. H2 is more important than H3. What this means is previously we always used to assume that if this document D1 has capital two times, and here is another document which has the word capital two times, they're both equal in terms of that word. But then now I can say, well, this has, these two capitals are in the footnote, whereas these two are in H1. What that would mean is somehow if you are looking for documents which have the word capital, presumably the guy who made this page thought this page is really, really about capital. That's why they put them in header. Whereas this guy said it has some possible connections to capital. That's why they put them in the footnote. Okay? So now what you get to do with this tag information is previously we used to just count the number of occurrences of the words. Now you count weighted occurrences of the words. And the weight is basically where is it occurring. So if you are occurring in H1, you get weight WH1. If you are occurring in H2, then you get weight WH2. If you are occurring in body, you get weight WB. And if you are occurring in footnote, you get weight WF. Okay? And so what I can then do is the entire set of instances of this word capital can be seen, if there are a total of 48 instances, and then 3 are occurring in header 1, 0 in header 2, 2 in header 3, and 15 in body, and then the rest in the footnote. Okay, then I can essentially also have a weight vector. The weight vector might say you will get 2 points if you are in the header 1, you get 1.8 points if you are in header 2, and 1.6 points you get in header 3, you get 1 point for being in the body, and you get 0.5 points if you are in the footnote. Okay, then if I have this weight vector and this is the weight incidence, then I just take the dot product of those two vectors, I get the weighted occurrence of this word in that document. Okay, now of course you ask, Rao, where did you get these vectors from? This I know how to get. How did you make these up? I just made them up. All I know is header 1 is more important than header 2, header 2 is more important than header 3, and so on. Okay, the exact numbers, these are essentially parameters which potentially can be learned, but in most cases we'll just set a reasonable number. Okay, so that's the way you would handle the tags. The extra tag information can be handled to differentiate the weights, differentiate the incidence of the same word in different parts of the page. Okay? Okay, so that's basically how you can improve it. So in some sense, if I do this, then essentially I can handle this case where the capital is occurring in the title in one document, is occurring in footnote in another document, and the now your similarity measure will give it higher value than this one, because in some sense the capital is occurring much more in this than this. Okay, notice that you may actually have a query with other words too, and you are looking at the document as a vector in the space of words, except now the weights of this document in the space of words are determined by this dot product. So you essentially differentiate between the same word occurring in different places. A reasonable idea, not particularly hard, but it's a useful opportunity to use. It makes no sense not to exploit it because people put this, header information. Okay? Okay, so the other one, of course, is the other type of information is, so this is basically associate different levels of importance to term occurrences in the different tags, and this has a title is greater than header 1, greater than, etc. And then you have to make some numbers for that, you know, you mostly put up some reasonable numbers. You can write this as a machine learning problem, which actually tries to learn these weights, but it's not, most of the time, an overkill. There are papers which try to learn these weights, but it's mostly overkill. You can actually just put any reasonable number, that will work. Okay. Now the other issue is there is something else which is there, which is that, you know, you have hyperlinks, and in furthermore, apart from the fact that a page can be linking to another page, you normally say something while you are linking. Okay, there is this notion of anchor text. Okay, those of you who still remember how HTML works, basically you know that you would basically give the link, href, and then write a bunch of text, and then end. Okay, and whatever text you write, that kind of becomes, you know, underlined in blue, right? And that's the anchor text. So you're saying go here if you want this information, and you said what information can be found there. Okay, this is called anchor text. And a very interesting point about anchor text is that it really is page one's view of what page two is saying. Okay, so here is my page, and I think I am whatever it is I am, and so I write my stuff. And then you guys make pages, especially right after project one, and some of the people who are not in the class are making pages saying worst teacher I ever had, and putting links to my page. Okay, and I'm thinking things are going well, and then people are searching for worst teachers in ASU, and my name is coming up right on the top. I'm not stupid enough to put I'm the worst teacher in my page, right? Right. So, and still I am becoming one because perception is reality. That's how human societies work. It makes sense that if people think this is a good description of this page, and then they put this, now this text really is part of this page. So anybody looking for worst teachers, right, can find this page now, even though this page didn't have it. A very good example of this is at the very beginning, before hyperlinks, before search engines started taking into account this anchor text, okay, if you were to search for browser in Netscape, which was one of the earliest browsers, it would not find Netscape's own page as a result. Because Netscape thought, I don't need to say I'm a browser, everybody knows it. And so Netscape won't say browser, right? But other people are saying, for a good browser, go here, okay? And we don't look at that. And so we only look at the document's own contents in deciding what is the most relevant document. And if you do that, you will not be actually bringing Netscape's own page in answer to the query browser, which is a bad thing. Okay, now of course I would rather not be brought up when people are looking for worst teacher, but that's just the bad side of this same idea. The good side is that many pages which may not actually describe themselves in the right way will still be found because other people describe them in the right way. Okay, so what this actually means is anchor text, this is the anchor text. It's part of this document here, but it's really also part of this document. So previously, I used to say that TF and IDF, TF is a local measure, IDF is a global measure, right? IDF depends on how similar this word is in other documents. TF at least, the document knew, okay, because it depends only on that document. There goes that happiness now. Because the document may not have these words, this document may not have these words, and yet they're just as much a part of this document because we want to use them in searching for this document. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's very important to get the inbound link as compared to the outbound link. So outbound are the anchor type. So from where we get that?
No, I understand. That we'll get to that too. Okay, right now all I'm saying is if I have a link which points to this page with some anchor text in it, then this text really is a description of this page.
And this is the Google first rank of that result. So
I don't understand what you're saying.
Because in case of inbound link, if A is having inbound link from a very famous site.
No, you're missing two different things. I will get to the inbound link issue in a second. Okay, but this point, all I am saying is this has nothing to do with link analysis yet. All I am saying is, if people think you are a duck, you are a duck. You know, that's how human societies work. Okay, it doesn't really matter what you think you are. If everybody else thinks you are a duck, you are a duck. Okay, you might as well start quacking, right? And nobody actually writes on their page. You know, I mean, so the point, of course, is that now, what I was trying to say is, document is now indexed, the document is now indexed, not just with its own contents, but the contents of the anchor text. This is what we are agreeing to do. Okay? And I gave you as a good example, Netscape would be now found as a browser, even though Netscape didn't have the word browser written on it. Okay? Obama would still be found as president, even though, because of false modesty, he didn't write, I am the guy, I am the president, on his page. Because everybody else says he's the president. Okay? Now the question, of course, is, remember that anchor text words, how should they be weighted with respect to the normal body words? You notice that within the normal body words, so the normal body words are weighted little less than the header words, weighted little higher than the footnote words. Where do you think in this spectrum the anchor text should come? Should it be given higher weight, lower weight, what? To the extent you think what people think of you is more important than what you think of yourself, you have to give higher weight. Okay, in fact, you probably want to give it a weight which is in some sense proportional to the number of people who think that of you. I mean, I would be really unhappy if one person doesn't like me and puts a hyperlink to me saying worst teacher, because of which I will still come as the top worst teacher in ASU. I would like to get somebody else to come up higher because they had multiple students showing their page and saying worst teacher, presumably, right? So basically, you do want to give anchor text a significant amount of importance, and the importance should depend, of course, upon how many times it's present in the anchor text, okay? Now, obviously, many of you probably already know that anchor text is, because of the positive as well as negative examples I've given, that it's a minefield. You know, this is a way you can use to tar other people, right? And that's how human societies work, after all. Most of you probably know that just a while back, if you typed miserable failure on Google, you would get George Bush, okay? Right? Now it no longer happens. The most recent version of this is what? Most recent version of this, which was also controversial, except now the left got angrier rather than the right. You know, in this case, the right got angrier. Yes?
Maybe it's the Google and Baidu, but there used to be, Baidu is the main search engine in China that takes over Google after Google leaves, and you can search for SB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no, this is, what I'm saying is more like this sort of a politically charged issue. In this particular case, miserable failure brought up, you know, George Bush's page, you know, President of the United States page for a while, okay? And notice that miserable and failure are pretty common words in English. And for you to bring up George Bush as the top result for that, a huge number of people had nothing better to do than sit down at their home, make pages, link to White House page saying miserable failure, miserable failure. While they were doing this, the elections were actually being held in 2000 as well as in 2004. They were busy making the pages and feeling very smug about it. And the elections, unfortunately, are counted not by the Google bombs, but by the number of votes cast. So my own theory is Democrats were at home making pages, right? Whereas Republicans actually showed up at the elections. You see what I'm saying? But, you know, so anyway, so a whole bunch of people have to put this link for a common word to bring up another page which doesn't have that. I'm assuming that George Bush did not have the word miserable failure written on his web page, just as much as I would not write "I'm the worst teacher" written on my web page, whether or not it's true. Yes.
Well, is it like exponential? Like once like a news website picks it up who has like a really high rank, and then they start saying this is what's happening, and they're associating the words, then it just keeps going faster and faster and faster.
No, accesses are different. Differentiate between access and link. And also, this was actually Web 1.5 time frame. You know, nowadays, there are a lot more dynamically generated links. Even blogs can be linking to pages. In fact, we should be talking about if you have a link from a page versus a blog article versus some dynamically generated page, should you differentiate those links? Okay, but when this was happening, it was mostly static pages. Okay, you may have read on CNN that fellow Democrats are doing this, and so you also, you are on the way to, you know, vote in the elections, but then you decided to turn back and do this instead. Okay, and that way you can increase the number of people putting this link. Of course, now it's no longer, they removed it. The version that I was talking about that happened more recently is Michelle Obama's face would come, I mean, if you type Michelle Obama, a certain offensive image would come as one of the top results. I don't know, you people must be really working hard on this class and you're not following news. But this was like a couple of months back. Okay. But all of these are essentially, you're getting a search engine to bring up a page higher up. After many, many pages that have those words, you're bringing a certain pages up by just repeatedly saying that page has this quality. Okay. So this basic idea is the Google bomb. It's been called Google bomb because the anchor text being part of the content over which the document is indexed is, you know, Google was one of, among the first guys to try it. Okay, so, but it has this problem that you can tar someone's page just by linking to them with some damning anchor text, and if the anchor text is unique enough, then even a few pages linking to that page with that word might bring that page high up. In fact, it's an interesting thing. So I'm suggesting to you that if you want to do this to somebody, it would be really hard to do it with miserable failure because they're just too common a word. Okay? You should pick a word that doesn't appear that much. Okay? So for example, you could point to somebody's page and say, "My cuddly bubbly oogums," and unfortunately, as rare as that word might sound, Seinfeld fans know that that's a pretty popular word. Okay. No, in fact, Shmoopy is even more of a popular word. So any of these words, you can check to see how many hits are there currently. And if it's a rare enough phrase, then you can point to whoever you want to point to with that as anchor text and get a couple more of your friends to do it. And 2-3 weeks later, presumably, that page will start coming up high as the answer to that query. So you can make Google bombs. Okay. And anchor text is a way of changing the page, in essence. Okay, this is sort of without changing the page, you are changing its contents. Okay, and it's given higher importance than the page's contents. Most search engines actually give it slightly high importance, where the importance is proportional to the number of, you know, links, presumably. Yes. What? We haven't come to that. We are going in a line right now. We'll talk about the importance of the page in the next point. Okay. So this is basically, you know, how to use the anchor text to improve or worsen the retrieval, whichever you like to think about it. Okay. Okay. This basically is saying that the tag information normally, they have relative, so a particular word can be occurring in different number of instances, you know, thrice in the header one, 0 times in the header two, etc. And so the TF now is a TF vector. And you multiply the TF vector by the weight vector to get the effective TF for each word. That's the basic idea. Okay. Any questions up until now? This is easy stuff. Until now, basically, all we did we already handled this part. You know how to exploit the anchor text. You know how to exploit the tag structure. Okay. So the other thing, of course, is how to handle the uncurated adversarial nature of the web. That will keep us busy for about 2 classes. Okay. So the problem that, again, I think basically we already know how to compute vector similarity. You can even do latent semantic indexing based vector similarity. Okay. And they will eventually be, for any given query, it will try to figure out, you know, the document that seem to have very high similarity. The problem is, what if there are too many such documents? Okay, if you are too many documents which have 0.99 or even 1.0 vector similarity to your query, then among them, how do you differentiate? If you don't differentiate, then you have to say, here are the following million documents which have the words white and house on it. Which of these million are better than the other? Okay. Now, this is not a problem as much probably in traditional IR, because then all of those, there will be, here are 7 books which have the word White House in them, and maybe you want to read each of them to see which one is the White House that you want to, which is the book that you want to read more about. Similarly, if you're looking for a Civil War book, you go to a library catalog and you type Civil War, maybe 18 books will come with the word Civil War, and it's not too hard to look at least each of them. Okay. Here, on the other hand, you can get a million, pages which have the word Civil War, and 2 million pages which have the word White House, and which are somehow more important than the other. Furthermore, you know that there may be actually, while in traditional IR, you don't expect people to make books up with completely misleading titles. On the web, you assume that's par for the course. People probably did everything they can to just increase the number of people coming to their page, okay, or just to trip other people off. Okay, so there may be too many pages, and similarly, the web content creators are autonomous and uncontrolled, so no one stopped me from making a page, writing on it, this is the home page of President Bush. Will that then make it the home page of President Bush? Of course not. Okay. And adversarial, I may intentionally create pages with keywords just to drive traffic to my page. I can intentionally state wrong facts on my page, then about that entity. I can do anything I want. Okay. So I need some metrics about not just syntactic similarity of a page to the query, which is what we have talked a lot about until now. But among the pages that seem to be very similar to the query, some other notion of which is more trustworthy, more important. Okay, more reliable. Okay, so the question essentially is, so here are some desiderata for talking about importance of pages, all of which essentially have the same similarity to the query, and you're trying to say which one is more important, more reliable, and so on. Yes.
We hear this link, this protocol about HTTPS, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Is it a kind of curated kind of stuff?
HTTPS is just secure web communication. That's all. It has nothing to do with curation. No, why would I not be able to? No, HTTPS is, all HTTPS does is it's essentially decrypting and decrypting your communication to the page. It has nothing whatsoever to do. I can talk to useless people with highly secured phone lines. Secured phone lines, so your hope somehow is only good people will be having HTTPS. That's a very, it's possibly could be true. This is sort of like saying, rich people can't be untrustworthy because they're rich already, which obviously is not true because, the entire stock market went away the other day and they're all rich people. So the point is, that's a very it's kind of possibly sometimes might work, but we can actually do much better than that.
Can I have a free Bank of America site on HTTPS?
Yeah, why not? HTTPS has nothing to do with, HTTPS is just, there are things like certificates and so on and so forth. Those are interesting. But again, most of those ultimately, so for example, somebody might say this site certificate is not, once in a while you'll say that site certificate is not, is not one of the ones that we have. Okay, what that means is this site did not register itself with any reputable certificate registering agency. Okay, that is, you may want to do this for example, your banks. Okay, but the most important thing about web really is that you could think of this, let's see, where are we? You could think of this as a bug or a feature. Okay? You can, for example, say Wikipedia shall not have any bad articles. I would make sure that, what's this guy's name, Wikipedia's big guy? Jim Wales. Jim Wales will personally go to their home, look at their cupboards, etc., before they allow them to write articles. He could make sure that way. Then Wikipedia will be all of 78 articles by now. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the biggest thing in web is full centralization can avoid a lot of problems. But full centralization also will lead to non-web. You can sanitize Tempi such that you can never, bad things can never happen to you. But then it won't be Tempi. Do you understand what I'm saying? So web, you want the autonomy, you want the uncontrolled nature, because that's what really is its magic. You know, in some sense, everybody can put stuff up. And you need to learn to deal with it, rather than say, let me stabilize the environment, okay, beforehand. Okay, for kids, you might. You can say, here is a kid's web where kids can play, so that kids won't see bad things. Okay, but how long can we be kids? And we need to handle the world in its raw form, and we need to have brains to handle that. Okay, so yeah, web 7.8, what doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, those are all, you know, buzzwords. I mean, I think web 2.0, mostly what people say is you're also writing, it's not just a reading web. But that's less important. I mean, it's an interesting point, but what I'm talking about right now is how do you talk about, you know, how do you define these notions of importance? Okay, we know that we need notions of importance. I can just jump and say, here is a program called Authorities Hubs. Here is another program called PageRank. You just use them, you will get importance. But before going there, I want to think a little about what are the features on which importance might depend, and then talk about how to compute those features. Okay, so page importance is hard to define unilaterally such that it satisfies everybody. That's first point. Okay, there are, however, some reasonable desiderata that people might agree on. One is perhaps it should be sensitive to the link structure of the web, because essentially pages are made by humans. In the human societies, your worth is determined by other people saying things about you. So I would start trusting you if my friend trusted you, and I trust my friend's judgment, so I trust you. Okay, so presumably link structure, to the extent you can think of link structure as an endorsement from one page to another page, it should be, you know, related to the notion of importance of the page. Okay, now it turns out we'll talk about the link structure, you know, in a minute, and you can actually evaluate it in two different ways, Authorities Hubs and PageRank being two ideas, but we'll get there in a minute. A different one, apart from the link structure, is amount of accesses that a page gets. Okay, how many of you read New York Times top 10 articles, and by doing so, make them more top 10? Right? I mean, you know, most of us have no time to read news, and so we read CNN front page, and CNN basically decides based on, you know, either they will try to push something as a popular article, or depend on other people who have no time, and they have liked what is Jennifer Lopez wearing, and so they put that as the front page article, even though a couple of countries just got nuked out of existence. That would be in the 17th page. And so we will definitely know what happened to Jennifer Lopez's dress, but not about these countries. Okay? So popularity begets popularity. And who am I to stop that? So in some sense, one important measure of importance is how many accesses that page is getting. Okay, and it turns out this may or may not be directly related to this. Okay, the link structure may or may not be directly related to accesses, but this is also an important issue. Now, the importance of a page should also hopefully depend on the query you are asking. I just hope so. Right? For example, you know, I want to get some work done in my home, and before I complete, you say, take Tom. Well, Tom probably only does walls. The work that I want to get done in my home is about roofing. Shouldn't you at least let me complete the sentence? You know, Tom may be a trustworthy drywall repair person, but would probably, you know, slip over roof and, you know, injure himself. Okay? So you want actually importance somehow to be related to the query. And then and of course also to the user, because some people trust some people, and in fact the people you trust may be different from the people I trust, and these two people probably glare at each other. Okay, so these are things that you want to care about, and in fact there, here are some other words that you can talk about importance of a page: eloquence of the page, okay, informativeness of the page, trustworthiness of the page, novelty of the page. You can ask yourself whether they are already handled by what we actually written there or not. But these are all the this is the sort of the spectrum of ideas for defining importance. You don't want to jump to one particular definition of importance before figuring out how to define the importance. Okay? So if I were to do the link structure, then that's basically what will get us to page rank and authority subs that we will be getting in one more slide. Okay. This intervening slide, you can read this slowly. Basically, it says, it tries to talk about the dependencies between these measures of importance. Okay, so for example, eloquence and informativeness may be reflected indirectly in the link-based importance measures. Trustworthiness may be related sometimes to link-based importance. Number of page access measure is not fully subsumed by the link-based importance. Okay, for example, something becomes hot news because somebody put it up in the high page. In New York Times put it up once, just the page, just the words, not necessarily the link. And still it's an important topic, and so you'll wind up going to those pages. Okay, a novelty, for example, shouldn't have been an issue but for the fact that web is evolving. There are more pages being made every day. A large portion, a pretty significant fraction of pages are being made up every day. So you can't just say, I didn't have to deal with the new pages. Okay, now you can go home and actually give any random simple query, not a very specific query, and then you can see how the current day search engines handle all of these. They might be using some link-based importance measures, but they also use novelty-based measures. They will, for example, get hits for that topic from news sites, and news sites are oftentimes keeping the more recent news articles. So that's one way you can handle the novelty. Okay. So the reason I actually brought this page and this page up is I don't want you to think right after these two we'll start talking about link-based analysis techniques. I don't want you to think that's somehow God-given way of defining importance. Okay. That would be the wrong thing to do. You know, you want to understand, you know, these are the variety of features that might actually wind up defining importance. Now I'm going to actually stick to link structure of the web, because in fact, as you see the dependencies, link structure winds up being used in at least making up for some of the other features to some extent. So the question is, how do I use link structure to define the importance of a page? It turns out that there are two pretty influential ideas and multiple variants of those influential ideas, and these two influential ideas are already very close to each other. Okay, and what I want to do in this class and next class is to describe both these ideas and the trade-offs among them and the variations that you can do in computing the page importance. So one idea is called authorities and hubs. Okay, authorities and hubs are, it's also called the Hitch algorithm. And the basic intuition behind it is that the world is made up of people who know where to find good people, okay, and the important people themselves. So there are important people and other people who know important people. Okay, as examples in Hollywood, right, a publicity agent would probably will tell you, you know, an agent of an act, a star would tell you, you know, how to get access to that star. And the importance of a publicity agent depends on which stars they are representing. The importance of the stars, in some sense, depends on how important are the publicity agents who represent them. In papers, textbooks versus original journal papers. Textbooks will basically tell you all the important things that got done in an area. Okay, so if there is, if you become part of the textbook, like PageRank or AuthorityHub becomes part of a textbook of information retrieval, then some more that means they are more important original ideas. Okay, so the original ideas themselves are essentially being referred to by the textbook. Okay, so these notions are simply represented in terms of hubs. Hubs are like agents and textbooks. Okay, who point you to the important people. Authorities are the important people themselves, and both are important features. You want to know who should you go to get the right advice, and you also want to know who is the final person who will answer my query. Okay, so you can think of analyzing the link structure of the web in terms of authorities and hubs. Okay, so authorities become more important because important hubs are pointing to them. Hubs become more important because they are pointing to important authorities. A textbook on information retrieval which doesn't talk about TF-IDF metric would probably not be bought by anybody, because TF-IDF is too important an idea not to even list it in the textbook. Okay, and similarly, if on the other hand most textbooks stop referring to TF-IDF idea, then TF-IDF idea is no longer important. People will forget about it. Okay, for example, there used to be textbooks which used to refer to the Earth-centric theory of the universe. At that time, you know, if you don't write a textbook about, you know, if you write a textbook about the, you know, astronomy and don't refer to that theory, then nobody will buy your textbook. But now it's no longer, no textbooks on astronomy talk about it. And that also kind of is reflected by the fact that that theory is no longer important. Okay, so this is one way of viewing the directed links in on the web, that they define agents and stars, textbooks and original papers, hubs and authorities. Hubs become important because they're pointing to important authorities. Okay, so hubs are the kingmakers, authorities are the kings, and you need both. The kingmakers make the kings. Okay, so that's one way of looking at the link structure. And if you go with this, then the way you would actually ensure that you are returning the important pages is that you take the pages among the million or so pages which have the words that you are looking for, the query that they have very high similarity to the query that you are looking for. Okay, among those million, you look for top 5 hubs and top 5 authorities. And that's how you are essentially filtering out some of the results. That's one idea. Okay. You can be both hub and authority, yes. There are textbooks which actually sometimes wind up extending the state of the art. And so then people will start referring to the textbook for that extension of authority, extension of the idea. In my own little course here, a while back, I think some years back, somebody from Europe sent me a note saying, I really liked the way you described LDA and LSI, which I described last time, right? The idea of LSI being a special case of LDA. And I want to refer to it. Can you give me a reference to your course? So there I have a course, which is basically a course is more like a hub. It sort of became a minor authority on that little topic. So in fact, in authorities hubs, for each node, you will give an authority score and a hub score. And you update both of them. We'll figure out how to compute those numbers separately. Okay? So that's one idea. The other idea of looking at the link matrix is, remember, basically there are pages which are directed links to other pages. Okay? And you view those links to kind of compute authorities and hubs in one way. The other way to do it is to say that think of, you know, the landing probability on a particular page. If you think of the web as connected pages, so the question is, if people are just clicking, okay, what's the probability that they will wind up finding themselves on a particular page? The higher that probability, somehow the more important that particular page is as a landing page. Okay, and if you never even land on a page, then you probably don't want, if nobody ever is landing on that page, then you probably don't want to land on that page either. Okay, so you would view the hyperlinked pages as defining a Markov chain. So each page, when it is connected to other pages, suppose a page is connected to five other pages, then the assumption is somebody comes to this page, after a while of looking at this page, with like about 1/5 probability, they will transition to one of these links, which is more or less what you guys do, right? You go into a page and you are actually going there to complete the homework, but then there is this other interesting link on that page, so you click on that, and then after that you click on another link, and then I know pretty soon the day is over and the homework is still not done. Okay, this is how we live our lives now, but basically we do follow the links on the pages. Okay, so if you're following the links on the pages, if it turns out that all links unbeknownst to you are getting you to certain pages more probabilistically than other pages, then that means the ones that are at the receiving end of your final landing are somehow more important because they bribed everybody to push the traffic to them somehow. Okay, either bribed intellectually or bribed financially. Okay, so if you do this, then you are looking at the same exact matrix as essentially a Markov chain, and you are computing the steady state probabilities of the states in a Markov chain. And I'm assuming, even though you probably no longer remember it, that you have all done Markov chains in probability statistics courses. And you know, a Markov chain essentially under certain conditions will have a well-defined steady state occupancy frequency, steady state occupancy probability. And if you compute those, the higher the probability of a state, or the higher the probability of a particular page, the states correspond to pages in our Markov chain, the more important it is. Okay? This is another way of looking at the importance, and then you will say, return the pages with high probability of landing. Among the million pages which have your query, return the pages that have higher probability of landing than the other ones. So presumably, if I put White House on my page, okay, this guy may still not bring up my page because the important hubs are not pointing to my page. So I am not important enough. So I am neither a high important page nor a high hub page. So I would not get selected in this case because I am neither a good survey page nor a good original important page. Here I won't get selected because many other pages which have the word White House have higher probability of landing than my page. So I won't get selected again. Okay, so the end result is the same, but the interpretations are quite different. In fact, you have to ask yourself, you know, how do authorities and hubs correspond in any way to page rank, which is this stationary probability of state occupancy. Okay, in my view, actually, there's really no difference. Okay, I'll tell you both the ideas, and there is not much you can talk about one idea being much better than another idea. Okay, I will have to discuss them, so I'll discuss them authorities hubs first and then page rank next. Before I go forward, however, I should tell you a few things about the sociology of ideas, especially for graduate students here. Authorities hubs was made by this guy called John Kleinberg. John Kleinberg not only came up with the idea, he published papers on it. Okay, he wrote a paper in SODA, which is a symposium on discrete algorithms, back in 97 or 96. Then he wrote a paper on JSEM, which is the top flagship journal of computer science, and especially theoretical computer science, right? And he became quite famous because of those papers. He actually got tenure at Cornell. He's a full professor at Cornell. Yeah, he became famous as well as rich. He got a MacArthur Genius Award, which is basically given to people who are considered geniuses by MacArthur Foundation, and which for him depends on the amount of money you get, depends on how old you are. Okay, younger people get less money, older people get more money. You know, if an older genius has been overlooked for so long that you almost have to do reparations for overlooking them. And so they give them 500K, and if you're really young, you get about 100K. This guy got 250K, I think, okay? And then he also got ACM Infosys Award, which was a new award that ACM started, which is kind of junior Turing Award, okay? And he also got several Google grants, okay? Now, on the other hand is PageRank. PageRank algorithm was done about the same time. It was rejected from CIGAR, which is a conference, not even an actual you know, journal. And SIGAR at that time was not anywhere near as important as SODA. Okay? And even SIGAR would reject this idea. And it never got officially published. So much so that the two people, Page and Brin, who came up with the idea, never even got a PhD. Okay? And let alone any cash awards. No cash awards. And basically had to start a company instead. And the moral of this story, of course, is you must publish. Okay? It's very important to publish. I hope you really got my idea. Okay. The interesting thing is this guy gets grants, but from Google. But that's a different story. That's the sociology of the two ideas. In terms of theory, really, there is very good connection between the ideas. There isn't that much different. And in fact, they were developed about the same time. I think Kleinberg actually developed his idea earlier. And in fact, there are books written on this stuff, and where I think one of the books on search engine history says Kleinberg desperately asking Page and Brin, but don't you want to publish your idea? The conference deadline is coming. Don't you want to publish your idea? And those guys somehow did not. You know, cannot believe why. But now no longer Google has learned its lesson and doesn't publish anything. Google doesn't have research. It's the richest company in the world, right, other than Microsoft, and it has no research. There's no Google Research Labs. There's Yahoo Research Labs, and Yahoo almost may or may not exist based on the day, you know, day of the week. And they have a research lab. Google doesn't. You know, Google basically completely gave up doing separate research. Everything they wind up doing is just fed into the search engine. Anyway, that's just a sort of a digression. Let's get back to Authorities Hub. And within 15 minutes that is still remaining, I can pretty much tell you what the idea is and how it somehow all connected to eigenvectors once again. In fact, PageRank is also connected to eigenvectors. Authority Subs also is connected to eigenvectors. PageRank is connected to eigenvectors because the Markov chain's steady state probability of the states corresponds to the primary eigenvector. Okay, we'll see that. And Authorities Hubs, we will see as to why it actually winds up connected to Authorities Hubs in a minute. Okay, so the idea is somehow you're trying to differentiate between these notions of hubs, which are king makers, and authorities, who are king wannabes, right? And so a page that is referenced by a lot of importance pages, that means it has a lot of backlinks. Backlinks means other people are pointing to you. It becomes a bigger authority. Okay? And so it's an important authority. A page referenced by a single important, and it's not just the numbers too. A page referenced by a single highly influential textbook, a paper referenced by a single highly influential textbook will become the most important paper. Even though another paper was referenced by a huge number of graduate students who wrote papers on that in small conferences, the moment a main textbook refers to your paper, you hit the jackpot as far as ideas are concerned, because now everybody has to figure out what that idea is. So it's not just the numbers, it's the importance of who is referring to you that matters. Okay. Now, in terms of who is referring to you, a page that references a lot of important pages is also important. But its importance is because in terms of it's a good textbook, it's a good hub. Okay? And importance now can be propagated. Your importance can be just defined in terms of the hub importance of the people pointing to you. So for an authority, its importance can be defined as a function of the hub values of the people pointing to it. For a hub, its importance can be defined in terms of the authority values of all the pages that it is pointing to. In the steady state, all these equations must just have one solution. Okay? So now basically all I am saying is, up to now what all I said is that if I have a bunch of pages which are referring to a bunch of, so this is, you know, H1, H2, blah, 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 H3, H4, and A1, A2, A3, A4, then the authority of this page is a function of the hub values of H1 and H2. And the hub value of this page is a function of the authority of A1 and A2. That's all I'm saying. Now the question is, how do I define this function? What I will do is, I'll try just simple adding. Okay? Simple adding. So I will say, my authority, the authority is defined as the sum of all the hub values of the pages that are pointing to it. And the hub is defined, hub's important, hub score is defined as sum of all the authority values of the authorities that you are pointing to. And as I said, in fact, although in this picture it looks like these guys are all authorities, these guys are all hubs, in general a node can have both an authority score and a hub score. Okay? So when I'm computing the authority of this page, what matters in this page is the hub value of these pages. Okay? Whereas if this guy in turn is pointing to some other page, okay, some other page, then their importance depends not upon its importance but its hub values. And its hub value depends on their importance. Hubs are connected to authorities which are connected to hubs. Okay? Yes?
So if A1 is also connected to A2,
mm-hmm,
that means A1 is pointing A2.
Yeah.
And S1 is not pointing
A2. Mm-hmm.
In that case, A1 is more having hub value.
Okay, let's just stick to that. So the question is, I'm basically starting the intuition. In a minute, I'll show you some equations, and then those equations, you can first of all see what they say. Okay? Okay, so if you have authorities and you have hubs, if for each page you have two scores, H page P, you have an authority score A of P and hub score H of P. Okay? Then all I would say is the A of P in the steady state should be equal to the summation of the authorities of P. And similarly, I'm sorry, the authority of P should be in the steady state be equal to sum of the hub values of all the nodes pointing to it. And in the same steady state, the hub value of this node should be equal to the sum of the authorities of the nodes it is pointing to. The question, of course, is I am making some hopes that there will be a steady state. Okay, that's the big issue. Is there going to be a steady state? Under what conditions will you think there will be a steady state? Okay, the reason, I guess anybody could have made this kind of an idea, the reason Kleinberg sort of got the traction he got was because he essentially made the connection to iterative computation of authorities and hubs and a fixed point in terms of eigenvectors, which, you know, in a minute you will see. Okay, so here, authority computation is for each page P, AP is the summation of the authorities, hub values of it, the other pages pointing to it. And the hub value of P is the summation of authorities of the pages it is pointing to. Okay? Now, let's do this matrix using some matrix ideas. Okay? So you can have a matrix representation where you have a bunch of pages, right? So in the matrix, essentially, let's consider the matrix A, which is the adjacency matrix. Adjacency matrix means it has a 1 if a page, you know, it has a 1 in the ijth element if ith page is pointing to jth page. Okay? So A is the adjacency matrix. Entry PQ is 1 if P has a link to Q. P is showing link to Q. In web, there's only forward links. There are no backward links, right? Okay, so the only things you know are forward links. So P has a link to Q, that means the PQth element is 1. If there is no link, it will be 0. So that's your adjacency matrix in terms of links. Okay, now you can of course talk about A transpose, which is the transpose of this matrix, wherein PQ would be 1 if P has a link coming from Q to it. Okay. Now, let HI be, so now remember that for each page you need a hub score and an authority score. So, hub values is a vector, which is as long as the number of pages. Authority values is a vector, which is as long as the number of pages. Adjacency matrix is a square matrix, which is number of pages by number of pages. Okay, so you can start thinking in terms of these operations as matrix multiplications. You can convince yourself that the operation of setting the authority of a page as the summation of the hub values of all the nodes that are pointing to it can be simply written as AI, the vector AI is A transpose times the hub vector. Right now, I will assume that these authorities and hubs will keep changing. So we'll start with, let's say, zeroth authority and zeroth hub vector. And in the first iteration, I will change the hub based on the authority, let's say. And in the second iteration, I change the authority based on the hub. Third iteration, the other one, and then keep doing this. And the real question is, at some point, whether in fact HK and AK for large values of K will not change from one iteration to another iteration. That's stability. Okay. I mean, that's fixed point. Okay. So the operation of computing authorities can be written as A transpose times the hub value vector. The operation of computing hubs can be written as A times computing the authority vector. Now, in fact, HI minus 1 itself was computed from AI minus 1 using this equation, right? So what that means is authority I is A transpose times A times authority I minus 1. Okay? And similarly, hub I is A times A transpose times hub I minus 1. Now we are cooking, right? Because if I do one more iteration, then basically if I start with A0 and H0 and I compute the ith iteration, the ith iteration authority would be ATA power I times A0. And ith iteration of hub would be AA transpose power I times H0. Okay? So I started with some random authorities and hub values, and I kept multiplying these four vectors, in this case by A transpose A, which would be a symmetric matrix, positive symmetric matrix, and another one AA transpose, another positive symmetric matrix, and I just kept repeatedly multiplying them. Now, once you have these results here, you must realize that this is connected to homework, zeroth problem in the homework, because if you take any random vector A0 and multiply it by a matrix repeatedly, after a while that vector's projections in every dimension, every direction other than the primary eigenvector's direction would go to zero. Because basically every time you multiply a vector by a matrix, that vector is being stretched lambda 1 times in the primary eigenvector direction, lambda 2 times in the secondary eigenvector direction, etc. And lambda 1 is greater than or equal to lambda 2 is greater than or equal to lambda n. Okay, what that means is, as long as, based on the previous class's discussion, as long as you picked a vector which does not happen to have a zero projection on the primary eigenvector direction, it doesn't matter what vector you picked. Eventually, the only thing you will be left would be a vector that's mostly pointing in the primary eigenvector direction. Now, of course, the more number of iterations you do, the bigger this vector becomes in terms of its magnitude. Since magnitude shouldn't matter, what you want to do is take the direction. So you take unit vector. So basically what I can do is, rather than do this, every time I essentially work in terms of unit vectors. So start with two unit vectors, A0 and H0. After one iteration, you will get A1 and H1. Renormalize them such that they'll again become unit vectors. Second iteration, renormalize them. And if you keep doing this, then essentially after I iteration, this computation AI will be a unit vector in the primary eigenvector direction. And this will be the unit vector in the primary eigenvector direction of this matrix. There are two matrices, A transpose A and AA transpose. And one guy would be the primary eigenvector of this matrix, the other guy will be the primary eigenvector of this matrix. Nice. Okay? Now the interesting question is, since we know that these are primary eigenvectors, should we, if we were to compute authority and hub, why do I do this nonsensical power iteration? Why don't I just compute, ask the MATLAB to compute the primary eigenvector? Do you understand what I'm saying? So just take this matrix, compute the primary eigenvector of this matrix from the MATLAB. Okay? And then just say that is the authority. And similarly, compute the primary eigenvector for this and say that's the hub. The interesting point is the most efficient way to compute the primary eigenvector is this. So if you were to ask MATLAB, it pretty much, if it is a large enough matrix, the fastest way to compute the primary eigenvector is power iteration. So instead of asking it, since, you know, if it's a 10 by 10 matrix, if it is some little example I'm showing with just 10 pages, you can do this, you know, by calling MATLAB. If it is a million by million matrix, you know, or a 8 billion by 8 billion matrix, then you are obviously not interested in, you know, I mean, you want to do it in the most efficient way possible. And power iteration is the most efficient way to compute eigenvectors. And the speed at which power iteration converges is basically exponentially proportional to lambda 1 by lambda 2. So the farther the primary eigenvector is from the secondary eigenvector, the faster the convergence. Exponentially faster. Okay? So, and one other thing is, of course, that when we started this, we did not quite know whether these numbers we are going to compute would really have any connection to reality. Do we know right now? No. We also, even now, don't know whether they have any connection to reality. All we know is that they won't change based on the input values. Oftentimes, when you come up with measures, the most important syntactic thing is that the measure not change too easily, and that in fact it, you know, converges to a certain value all the time. Okay, for example, many of you took SAT, right? SAT gives numbers which are presumably about your intelligence. Nobody really knows whether it's connected to intelligence or not, but one obvious way you know that it won't be connected to intelligence is if it kept changing wildly based on the day you took the exam. Like today you took it, you got 800, I mean, in every section. Tomorrow it became 200 in every section. Day after tomorrow, 700 in every section. Other day again, 400 in every section. If you do this, then you know, make up your mind, SAT. Okay, so what SAT basically focuses on is stability of your result. In fact, the main reason people keep liking SAT is because it doesn't change. Between junior year to senior year, apparently it doesn't change by more than about 50 points if you don't do anything like major preparation or something, whatever. Okay, so really the whole claim of SAT as a measure of intelligence is that it is stable, not that it is right. And page importance measures have exactly the same issue. The whole claim of authority and hub or page rank is that A, I can make a plausible theory. You know, I told you the plausible theory, hubs and authorities. And B, they're stable. The most stable, that means if you in fact, you know, if you go up to k iterations or k plus 1 iterations, the importance would be the same. Okay? There is a different notion of importance which we'll talk about a little later, which is if I were to make random changes to the link matrix such that a few links go away, 10% of the links change, will the importance measure change significantly? That's a more interesting question, and we'll talk about it, you know, after we also talk about page rank. Okay? So, in the case of authorities hubs, you know, I have, I think, 2 minutes. I'm going to show you numbers, just so that you can do the numbers at home yourself. So you have a little graph like this, Q1, Q2, P1, P2. I'll initialize all the scores to 1s. So all the authority vector is 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Hub vector is 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. And I can, first of all, you know, normalize it right then and say 1 by root n for each of them. Yes? Yeah, that's the correct time, actually. Okay. Okay. So when I came, actually, that was wrong time. So I set it right. because there is a naval clock, and that's the right clock. And if you say local time, that's the right clock, and this was wrong. What? I don't know. I'll stop right now, but I did, that was wrong though earlier, so I changed it. So I'll just say that go and check this computation, and we'll come back to it and then talk about page rank next class.